So, my name is Suzanne. I am a very, very grateful believer in Jesus Christ. I have victories over alcohol and drugs. I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and I struggle with fear of new people and places, and I'm working on forgiveness.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. It's important to note that my being here in front of all of you is a miracle, and purely due to God's work in my life, since I'm terrified of you all, and terrified of speaking in front of you. Only with God is this possible. I am going to focus on the beginning of my story, on one key event which resulted in unhealthy behaviors used throughout my life. First, however, let me set the stage. I grew up happy, healthy, outgoing, and a tomboy. I was often the teacher's pet and the only girl doing the activities with the boys. My parents grew up in the Great Depression, which caused them, and especially my dad, to be very tight with money. Both my mom and my dad lost their mothers at a young age, 9 and 10, respectively. I believe this is why they had difficulty showing love. We were not huggers. I had one sister, 6 years and 4 months older than me. She died last July. And I have one brother, 6 years and 4 months younger than me. I am the middle child. I was very bright, and learning was easy for me. Then, at the age of 15, I was thrown from a horse. I received a concussion and injured my neck and back. 2 days later, my mother took me to the doctor, who noted the concussion and took x-rays. He sent me home saying it was too late for the concussion and nothing's broken. My injuries were much more severe than the doctors knew. It was before MRIs, so they couldn't see the nerve damage. I had horrendous headaches, which the doctors couldn't explain, so they decided they were psychogenic. They sent me to a psychiatrist. They didn't know about the effects of traumatic brain injury back then, so they didn't realize that my personality changes were related to this injury. I became very afraid of the outside world, almost agoraphobic. The shrinks put me on antidepressants. This was before they found out that antidepressants could cause teenagers to become suicidal. I became suicidal, and by the time I was 18, I was locked up in a psychiatric hospital in 4-point restraints for over a month. I learned 3 things. First, I couldn't face high school, so I learned I could use my headaches and illnesses to get out of facing the world I feared. Second, I learned that suicide was an option to escape the pain. And third, I found that alcohol brought me relief. I was only successful in school during the summer when the stable barometric pressure gave me relief from the headaches. I excelled in math and computer science, giving me a path to follow. I worked as a computer operator at NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research. Then as the first software test engineer at NBI, which is nothing but initials. I met my first husband and had my son Cassidy and moved to Silicon Valley. There I got a job at Rome, a telecommunications firm, and my workaholism kicked in. I rose up quickly through the ranks and was director of engineering by the time I was 30. The stress at work had me collapsing into alcohol when I got home from work each evening. I thought it relaxed me and helped me switch gears. What it really did was depress me and made me suicidal all over again. I moved from Rome to Cisco Systems. I was one of the first 100 engineers at Cisco, where I found myself surrounded by people smarter than me for perhaps the first time in my life. I felt inadequate and fell into unhealthy behaviors to get out of the situations that scared me. I started having psychogenic seizures, and I used them to escape. But rather than quit, I stuck it out for 7 years and received my stock option worth over $3 million. My husband left me a week later, taking half the money. I turned to cocaine to mask the pain. The cocaine helped me stop drinking. It helped me in many ways at first. I didn't need the alcohol anymore. I lost weight, and it helped my depression, making me feel like a normal person. In fact, when I saw my doctor in this early stage, he told me I looked the best he had ever seen me. If he only knew why. But within 6 months, I was down to a size 00. I didn't know there was such a thing before then. And I knew things were getting bad. So I found a house in Lyons, Colorado, and moved there, taking my 15-year-old son with me. I thought this move would bring with it a fresh start. But I brought myself along, so the problems followed. I was determined to make a new life for myself and my high school-age son, so I started working at the town hall. I thought it would be a good way to meet the people of Lyons. My boss invited me to church. When I heard the song, "I'm trading my sorrows, I'm trading my pain, I'm laying him down for the joy of the Lord," I knew I had found the answer I was searching for. I went up during the altar call and accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. I started attending Bible studies and even went on a women's retreat. I really wanted what this church was offering. On the way home one evening, I prayed to God for a God-fearing man, and he sent me my second husband. I'll call him T. He and I latched onto each other immediately, and he moved into my house within a week. He had grown up in a Jehovah's Witness household and was a walking Bible. I was drawn to the fact that he wouldn't argue with me. He seemed gentle and kind and had a fearlessness about him that made me want to be with him. He filled the void in my heart that my first husband had left. I was no longer alone. T and I started doing cocaine on our first date. I was glad to see it. I was tired of feeling my pain, my sorrow, and my shame. Over time, the cocaine stopped working, so T and I started smoking crack. Our highs became much higher and our lows much lower. We would use for days on end without eating or sleeping, and the hallucinations began ruling our lives. We believed we were being watched, or that the house and our bodies were crawling with bugs. You would think we would want to stop, but we always wanted more. While this was going on, T was teaching me about God and about the Bible. When I was struggling with bugs, he told me about Job. When I felt like I couldn't go on any longer, he told me about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. T would get me out of the house and into the mountains where we would run wild and free and would talk about God's wonderful creation. I couldn't get enough of his stories of God and the Bible, and we would get into huge theological discussions. I would search the Bible to find answers so I could out-debate him. The first time T got violent with me was when I was feeling very low. I had a rifle and wanted to shoot myself. Thomas grabbed the rifle from me and hit me across the back with all his force. It left a huge welt and a huge impression. I wondered if I had deserved it. So a couple days later, I showed it to my mother. She gave me a look that said, "What did you do to deserve this?" This confirmed for me that it had been my fault, so I told no one else. T's outbursts of anger became more common, but they weren't directed at me. I felt sorry for him and tried harder to show him love and comfort. I thought if I could just love him enough, his anger would go away. I was also struggling. I was back down to a size 0. I had pulled out most of my hair, and I knew I was going to die if something didn't change. One night, I went out on our balcony ready to die. Hallucinating, I took my last hit and saw 5 stars coming down from the sky to take me away. I knelt and prayed on my own for the first time in my life. I could hear T in the background singing, "Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya. Someone's praying, Lord, kumbaya." The stars went back up into the sky and I lived, knowing for sure there was a God and he was listening to me. Things started to change. I would pray for help and the coke would spill or get lost. I was gaining some weight and my hair started to grow back. Eventually, I felt able to leave the house, and T encouraged me to go to church. We went together. I always went up for prayer, letting one couple in on my secret that I was addicted to cocaine. Things were improving, but we continued to have our bouts of using coke and feeling despair. One day, sick with pneumonia, I was lying in bed, rocking to comfort myself. T was sick as well, and the movement of the waterbed was annoying him. I didn't stop when he asked, so T started choking me. Then he backhanded me. I was shocked. I didn't think I deserved it. I didn't know what to do, so I went to talk to my friend, who happened to be the sergeant at the sheriff's office. I didn't know that he had left a bruise. I didn't want him arrested. I just wanted some answers. My friend arrested T, and a restraining order was put into place. I immediately bailed T out, and he came back home. My son was going off to college, and I couldn't bear the thought of being alone. We got married with that restraining order in place. I thought if we got married, things would get better. The drug use continued. I pray for help and we get arrested. Out on bail, we continued. I pray for help and we got hot UAs. I blamed it all on T. However, when he was serving a 90-day sentence, I couldn't blame him. I had to face my own addiction and acknowledge that I was powerless over cocaine. Principle one, realize I'm not God. I admit that I am powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing and that my life is unmanageable. By the time that T got out of jail, I was in trouble with the law myself, but I still couldn't stop. We attended church whenever possible, and I never stopped praying for help. One day, standing in church, I realized that Jesus had died for me, just as I knew that my husband would die for me. I heard God say that he needed me. I knew that God needed me to reach others like me. Principle two, earnestly believe that God exists, that I matter to him, and that he has the power to help me recover. I had found an outpatient treatment center and was on a waiting list to get in as soon as there was an opening. My doctor had put me on Valium to help me get off the coke. A week later, cocaine crossed my path again. I didn't want to do it, but when I saw it, I smelled it. And when I smelled it, I couldn't stop. T told me that if I really didn't want to do it, I should flush it down the toilet. Every other time that he had made a comment like that, I laughed. I knew that we'd just go out and buy more, so why waste money? This time, I flushed it down the toilet. I was in despair. I knew it would always show its ugly face, and I knew I couldn't stop. I thought it was hopeless, so I overdosed on the Valium. I felt I had let God down. When I got out of the hospital, I was on a 3-day high that was higher than any drugs or alcohol. I knew God had given me this high. On the third day, I prayed that God let me go to sleep so I could go to church in the morning. Lying in bed, I put it all together. God had been in control all along. He had made the cocaine spill or get lost. He had gotten us arrested. He'd given us the hot UAs. He had done whatever it took to get me to this place of surrender. He was in control and he would set me free. So I decided to let him. Principle three, consciously choose to commit all my life and will to Christ's care and control. In that moment, I felt a sensation flow through my body. I heard a billion voices saying thank you, and I smelled the ocean. And my addiction went away. God had healed me of my addiction. Prior to this point, I couldn't live without the drug. At that point on, I had a choice. I was high on God. I soaked him up and did everything possible to learn more about him. During one of the church services, they introduced sign language as a new ministry. I remember thinking how beautiful sign language was and how much I wanted to do it. Once again, God spoke to me. He wanted me to translate. I took this to heart and overcame my fear of school and took an introductory course in ASL. Within 6 months, I found myself translating for a deaf man at our church of 20 people. God quickly showed me how he could use me and how I could depend on him to bridge the gap in my skills. That year, while T was in jail, I worked the steps with a vengeance and lived for AA in church. God worked many miracles in my life and helped me to build a strong relationship and dependency on him. He showed me that he was my foundation and that I could lean on him through all things. Just prior to T's release from jail, I realized I could not control his actions. So I worked him through the steps in my mind. Step one, I was powerless over T and he was unmanageable. Step two, I knew that God could heal T just as he had healed me. Step three, I turned T over to God for God to manage. Next, I researched in the Bible what I needed to do as a wife to make this marriage work. I vowed I would do everything that it said, and I believed God would honor my efforts. T got out of jail, and things were good. He was doing regular UAs and breathalyzers, and we were both doing well. I wasn't going to as many AA meetings because I thought I had to honor T and spend my evenings with him. My sponsor took away my service position and I decided that I had God and I didn't need AA. Soon, I broke my arm wrestling. I was put on narcotics. I abused them. By the time I couldn't get any more narcotics, I was drinking, and eventually T and I were back using cocaine. I knew that God still loved me. I tried to be honest with my church friends. I let them know what was going on, and I asked for prayer, but it seemed that every Saturday night, coke appeared, and I was unable to stop, make it impossible for me to show up at the church the next morning for the deaf man. I felt very guilty for missing church and not doing what I knew God wanted me to do. God stepped up and provided someone else to interpret at the church. God didn't need me if I wasn't going to do my part. I knew that God would never leave me or forsake me, Hebrews 13:5. I knew that he would finish the good work that he had begun, Philippians 1:6. But I felt myself being pulled back into the drug lifestyle, not wanting to be seen by anyone. My anger at myself came out against T. I blamed it all on him. I had been fine when he'd been in jail. This brought out T's own anger, and our arguments were fuel for his fire. Our outbursts escalated and became violent. Eventually, T's rage became physical, putting both of our lives in danger. Bleeding profusely one day, I went to my pastor's house for help, and they called the police. Once again, I was alone. T was in jail, and I couldn't stop using the drugs. I asked my pastor to find me a Christian treatment center. I proceeded to refinance my house to get the money to pay for treatment. Just as my money became available, my pastor found a place for me to go. Someone from my church bought me a one-way ticket to Phoenix so that I could get treatment. I walked into the treatment center, which looked like a mental hospital. I flashed back to my teens. I prayed, God, why here, God? Why couldn't God have found a more appealing setting? God quickly answered. In my first meeting, they told me I needed to look at one woman when I spoke to her. She was deaf. I knew then that God had me right where he wanted me. There was a Celebrate Recovery that came weekly to my treatment center, and when I got home, I found CR at a local church. Come to find out, three people that week had talked to the pastor about American Sign Language, and within a month, a deaf woman was attending CR. My exposure to her professional interpreters brought home my need to return to school for a degree in interpreting. I had to face my fear of college. I knew that God would get me through, so I took that impossible leap of faith and enrolled in college, something I thought I would never be able to do. God put me in touch with an amazing female pastor who helped me work through the abuse that I had suffered in my marriage. She walked me through my pain and my anger and explained to me how couples fall into a dance. She explained how hard it was to break out of the dance, how couples tend to fall back into their old patterns, even when they both wanted to change. The most important lesson she taught me was that I was just an empty vessel. I didn't need to do anything but show up and let God work through me. I used this to get me through college. I just needed to show up. I wasn't ready to give up on T. I arranged for him to get into treatment program. I thought if he could just get into treatment, he would see how great life was sober and he would change. T was let out of jail to attend treatment. Within a week, he left, choosing jail over treatment. All along, I had expected that God would change T just like God had changed me. What I had failed to consider was that T didn't see anything wrong with what was going on. He didn't want to change. God had nothing to work with. I filed for divorce and put in place a restraining order. CR was there for me as I walked through many of my fears. My return to school was one of my biggest fears. When discouraged, I used my faith to continue on and not quit. I ended up with a master's degree in rehabilitation counseling. I got a job working with deaf and hard of hearing adults. God put me in leadership roles at CR. I have learned more by sponsoring others and leading small groups and step studies than I ever did on my own. Through my sponsees, I have learned that it's okay to be broken and to depend on someone else. I have learned what real forgiveness looks like and how to apply it in my own life. I have learned what it feels like to be in relationship with someone without it being one-sided. Finally, I've learned how to pick up the phone and call someone when I need support. This past year has been very hard for me. A couple of weeks ago, when Jack taught on relapse and the heart check, H, hurting, E, exhausted, A, angry, R, resentful, and T, tense, I could check all the boxes. I feel like I've been in emotional and spiritual relapse for the past year, but I've kept coming back. No matter how low I've become, God has been there to get me through. At my worst point in March, when I didn't want to live, our ladies' Bible study on Nehemiah was reading the part where they finished the wall in 45 days. This told me that a miracle could happen in 45 days. I decided to back off trying to control all the disruption in my life and for 45 days to let God work. And by the time the 45 days were over, I was no longer pondering suicide, and there was some agreement on the fight over our home. God got me through. I have had to lean a lot on my CR sisters over this past year. When answering a question on our step study recently, it said, sometimes it's difficult for us in recovery to see the positive changes that God is making in our lives. Have you been able to accept and enjoy your growth? This is what I answered. I haven't seen growth in me. I feel like I've backslid a lot. I have seen growth in my sponsees, and that keeps me going. Thank God for CR. Thank you all.